Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The QBs went early, defensive players went late, and the Ravens got better this week on Pod Like a Raven. We talked about it a little last week, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, we talked about it a couple months ago. Teams' desperation to grab quarterbacks early in the NFL draft would only benefit the Ravens' ability to get top talent at 30. And six QBs ended up going in the top 12 picks, helping the Ravens do just that. I am Antonio Barbera with you to talk post-draft, talk about what the heck happened in the NFL, what happened with the Ravens, who they got, how good are these players going to be. Let's guess and see how amazing or how mediocre these draft picks are going to be 3 days after becoming Ravens. But first, let me bring in my co-host, starting first with Jace Evans. Jace, how you feeling a few days post-draft?
I'm feeling good, Antonio. It was a fun draft, like you said. We'll get into it in a moment. The top of the draft was just absolutely wild. Stuff we've never seen before, frankly. Just straight up have never seen in a draft before. And like you said, that like helped benefit the Ravens. So I liked what they did in the first round. You know, the thing with the draft is, even if you watch a lot of college football like I do, like, you're just so in the dark on so many guys because there's just so much college football and there's just so many players that you just have maybe heard their name in passing, especially when it comes to guys like linemen. So it is hard to have definitive opinions on a lot of these guys. Personally, at this point, like, I see the pick and I say, sure. So we'll know in a few months' time, start to know anyway. That's, you know, part of the fun of the few preseason games we still have left, to seeing some of these rookies out there getting experience. So yeah, it's hard to take too many big snapshots, but I liked it. I guess just big picture, I liked this draft for the Ravens. It was pretty straightforward. You cannot say they did not attack their needs in this draft. If you look at the positions they drafted, we start with a corner, we go to a lineman, we get an edge rusher. It's all the things we talk about they need all the time on this show in the last few months, and they did it. So yeah, I'm excited to jump into those particulars and the draft as a whole, because that was probably crazier than in general than anything the Ravens did. They didn't actually make a trade. That's just one thing of all our jokes about trading down. The Ravens didn't trade at all this entire weekend, so that's pretty rare for them. So yeah, not the most exciting draft, I guess, for that aspect for the Ravens, but still fun. And I do, like you said, I think the team got better.
And Tim Horsey, Tim, how you feeling after getting through seven rounds and nine picks of Ravens plus others?
It's something that we're going to expand on a little bit, but I feel like Adley Rutschman hitting a double into the gap. Like, I just feel like it's a nice, solid, you know, we're not swinging for the fences, Gunnar Henderson style or Tony Tater style. I watched a lot of Orioles this weekend, too, along with the draft. And big series with the Yankees as you're listening to this, hopefully on Tuesday or Wednesday. But I feel solid. I feel very solid. I feel, after taking a zoomed out approach of looking at everything, feeling pretty good about what the Ravens did. And I think, interestingly, a lot of the holes that we thought were, you know, massive issues for the Ravens have sort of been filled. And now I'm feeling much better about the roster, you know, right now as we record, than I did last week during the big mock draft episode.
All right. So we're going to get to the Ravens picks one by one a little bit later, but we're just going to start with kind of a few minutes going over the beginning of this draft, the first half of round one, which was looking pretty chalky for the first few picks, the quarterbacks that were expected, some picks that were expected, and then stuff hit the fan as we got into the 8 through 12, let's say. So I'll start with this. after watching those first 15 picks, this is not an earth-shattering opinion by any means, but the Ravens have been consistently successful for 25 years because they have GM stability. I mean, they have never needed to make a pick based on the, I need something to work in a splashy way or I won't have a job this year. This won't be my problem in a year or two because I'll be fired as the GM. That is a line that I kept hearing from draft analysts before the draft, during the draft, after the draft. Have the Ravens been good at picking players? Sure, they've had a lot of hits, they've had a couple of misses, but I feel like they have had just the luxury of calmly picking highly ranked players that they see at the top of their lists year in, year out because of this organizational stability that they have. And they did it again. Yes, they went to needs more so this year when it came to them, but they were players that they had ranked very highly on their board anyway. Other teams, especially in the first 15 picks, just went, we need this, smash the buttons, I don't care what spot, what the value is, I don't care who we currently have in the building, QB, want him, get him now. And I'm not sure how well that's going to work out for a few of these teams. The first three quarterbacks are the big ones, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, they go 1-2-3, great. Then we have that run of wide receivers that we talked about. We start seeing some tackles come off the board. The Falcons at 8. Michael Penix Jr. is something we will get into. I have some thoughts. And then even, maybe even crazier, and probably related to Penix going at 8, is Bo Nix at 12 to the Broncos. I had him in our mock, and I said the Broncos need a quarterback. They're going to take one of these guys. They're going to overdraft for one of these guys. So they'll trade back to the end of the first round and get him there. No, 12 overall for Bo Nix. And I just feel better. It almost doesn't matter who the Ravens take. I just feel better about my team based on seeing the desperation of these other teams, these other GMs, who obviously are making decisions that they need to look good quickly so that they can retain their jobs. The Ravens don't do that. That's how you are a good team, win football games year in, year out, and get postseason berths, and it is very, very refreshing.
Yeah, it's just keeping that multi-year picture in mind as you go that, yeah, they clearly, well, we'll get to the Falcons because they do have a multi-year picture in mind based on drafting Michael Penix, I guess you can say. So, but safe to say that was not something in anyone's mock. And then, yeah, the Knicks at 12, or yeah, Knicks pick at 12, like, that was just kind of almost ridiculous to me. So this matched, the six quarterbacks taken matches the 1983 draft for most taken. If you aren't familiar with that draft, that is the draft that saw John Elway taken first overall, Jim Kelly drafted, and Dan Marino drafted, and three other guys you don't need to worry about as much. They didn't really work out. But Dan Marino, arguably, when he retired, owned every NFL passing record, was QB6 in that draft, and I believe he was taken like 27th or 28th overall. Bo Nix, who is not going to be Dan Marino, was the 12th pick. And you look at it, and it's like exactly what you said, Antonio. It's just this desperation of the Broncos saying, we have cut our quarterback to incur an $80 million cap hit. We literally don't have, I believe, our quarterbacks on the roster are Jarrett Stidham and Zach Wilson, who they had traded for the other day. And you just talk yourself into, we need a quarterback. And I think the crazy thing is, if they don't take Nix at 12, I think the Raiders were probably going to take him. Like, it's very possible. So it's just this run on in offensive players in general. First 14 picks are offensive players. That's also a record for a draft. It's just things we haven't seen in the draft. And obviously it's more of an offensive league, but it just created this value for defensive players. And I think you saw what I generally view as smart teams in the league, not just us, but like the Seahawks taking Byron Murphy. That was like a great pick. You get the Colts taking Laiatu at 15, the first defensive player off the board who, you know, we talked about him. He, this pass rusher with all this upside, some medical concerns. You know, the Colts have their issues, but generally they are pretty sound in at least drafting under Ballard. And they just said, hey, what if we just take the best guy? And you see in the later half of this draft, it turns into, I think, a much more normal draft. And you're just seeing like all these teams getting value. And you're like, all these teams that are getting value players are also the teams that are going to be in the playoffs next year. It's just a very weird dynamic. And I thought, yeah, most accurately portrayed by just this crazy run. I mean, six of the first 12 picks are Knicks and Penix are not six of the top 12 most talented players in this draft. It's just kind of crazy. And I don't know, you know, it seems like we're not going to escape this cycle of just people drafting QBs this high all the time, constantly. And you do need QBs, obviously. 66 of them played last year or started. So it's a hard season to get through in a hard position. But the run was crazy. And yeah, I think it just illustrated why it is the same teams picking at the top year after year. Broncos are going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL this season, regardless of who starts at quarterback, basically. And yeah, I just hated it. But I loved it for us because it meant, you know, we'll get to it. Nate Wiggins falls down the board and the Ravens just stick and pick at 30. So yeah, it was a very strange draft just from that standpoint. But as an entertainment product, I loved it. It was great. I did not. The Penix pick was like the most surprised I've been watching a draft in years. So that was very fun. And yeah, then the next thing, ridiculous. But this is the world we're in now.
Yeah, to go on the Knicks thing real quick, the thing that baffles me the most is the reasoning behind it. And the main reasoning behind it was Sean Payton telling everybody that he was the guy who was supposed to have Mahomes, which, like, believe it if you want. But essentially the story is the Saints wanted him. The Saints wanted him. He even told Drew Brees, like, hey, we're looking at this kid out of Texas Tech. And obviously, you know, look, he's spewing this to the media or leaking this to the media. So believe what you want. But if it's true, and let's just give Sean Payton the benefit of the doubt, the reason he's picking a much worse quarterback at number 12 overall is because he didn't get arguably one of the greatest quarterback, not arguably, arguably one, the greatest, not arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and he missed out because the Chiefs got ahead of him. And basically that's his reasoning now for taking Bo Nix, because he went back and forth. He went on Pat McAfee afterwards and essentially was like, you know, he starts with that of like, well, I had the chance to draft Mahomes. I didn't want to let that slip by again. And he starts trying to say that Bo Nix has traits like Mahomes and then quickly catches himself because he knows that's absolutely moronic to say and goes back to the whole like, well, that was kind of the reasoning. That shouldn't be your reasoning for taking a guy who's probably a third round pick and at best is maybe a backup in this league. It's just asinine. And like you said, Jason, Antonio, like this is why you have the Arizona Cardinals constantly picking towards the top, who, by the way, had a really good draft. Although, you know, we'll see. I hate the draft grades thing because, like, I know you need to do it, and I read all of them. But, like, we don't know if the Commanders' 9 players that they picked are actually going to be good. But they picked 9 players. So everybody's like, 9 players, great job. Like, it's just the amount of picks they had. Whatever, it's a whole different story. But that's the reason you get these teams that are constantly competitive, because they're like, yeah, y'all – in the loony bin up there, go make your mistakes and we'll just wait for guys to fall. Just a couple other quick notes from the first round too. I mean, you guys have covered it all. Go, by the way, if you want to have 2.5 hours more of draft content, you can't get enough, go back and listen to the mock, because we did pretty good in terms of picking, you know, at least matching up teams, like Antonio mentioned with Bo Nix, although we were much more reasonable than Sean Payton. I have just a few main takeaways here. Why is everybody helping the Chiefs, including the Buffalo Bills and then later in the draft, the San Francisco 49ers in the first and second round, who literally make trades with the Chiefs and allow the Chiefs to go up and get guys that they want? I think Xavier Worthy is a questionable pick at 28, so maybe you think that. But just allowing the Chiefs to go up when you're the Buffalo Bills, the team that's been competing with them for the last 5 seasons, it makes absolutely no sense to me. And stop doing it. Stop helping. Like, they've already built the Death Star. They don't need any more help. Like, you don't need to trade up to get them that little patch that would have covered the hole, that blew the whole damn thing up. Like, you don't need to trade up to help them out at all. And it just, especially if you're the team competing with them. Again, they're right in front of me, so I just, not to mention them again. But if you're the Cardinals, then fine. Like, you want to acquire picks, you want to get talent, whatever, that's fine. You're the Buffalo Bills. Stop. Stop helping the immortal enemy. It just makes no sense to me. And then I know we'll do some more first round stuff. I'll leave Penix for Antonio because I know he's got thoughts. Why didn't we see Jim Harbaugh taking Joe Alt when he was simply the best tackle? We all said, oh, well, he doesn't play on the right side. And John Harbaugh just said, well, he's played on the right side a little bit. I'll make it work. Yeah, he's the best tackle prospect. He's enormous. He took up like 75% of his massive couch at his house. We should have all seen this coming. And then Jim Harbaugh with the quote of a very quotable, by the way, couple of days in the draft. If we talk about Keon Coleman with an all-time press conference with the Bills, we talk about Xavier Leggett and just that Southern accent that is just so sweet coming off in his press conference as well. But then Jim Harbaugh basically going, yeah, I know you guys are going to talk about weapons because we've gotten rid of literally everybody and then drafted a guy named Ladd. We see offensive linemen as weapons. I saw that and just wanted to hook it right into my veins. Of like, yes, Jim, you're going to go like 8-9. I'm here for it. Yes, Jim. But overall, a really entertaining first round for the value. You know, we'll talk about Wiggins a bit later. But yeah, it's fun, man. The draft is awesome. And I think this year brought more thrills and spills than even a normal year because of the lunacy of what happened at the time.
The Chiefs thing is frustrating. There's literally one team in the league, I think, that we don't want to get better or do things that are annoying. And
it's the one team.
AFC rivals just kind of getting right out of the way so they can pick exactly the player they want for their need. It's frustrating. Okay, we have to talk about it. We have to talk about, I was going to say about Michael Penix Jr., but no. We have to talk about the Atlanta Falcons. None of this is Penix's fault. Good for him. Way to slot as high as you possibly can. The selection makes absolutely no sense. I do not care how the Falcons brass has chosen to spin it. You have a quarterback who you just signed to a four-year, $180 million deal with $100 million guaranteed. There is no getting around this contract specific to Cousins because he always gets these like ridiculously high guaranteed numbers year in, year out. That's his specialty. I think he got voted in something like he's one of the most respected players in the NFL because of how he handles contracts. This was voted on by other players. It was like they just really respect how he's done the guaranteed money. That's what he does. It's the Cousins special. He is the guy for this team now based on the money decision you made as the Falcons to get him. His cap hit in year three of his deal is 20% of the team's cap. They can maybe move on after year two, where you've already paid him $100 million guaranteed, plus whatever monies he's going to get in year one and year two. You can maybe move on after year three. What is the plan here? You keep Cousins for 3 years. That's when you have the easiest or the most like cost-effective out, three years into four. And then Penix will come in. Then he kind of rides in as the starter at age 27. A dude with a laundry list of injury questions and doubts about even being able to have a long-term career. At age 27, starting year four, the same point where they'll have to decide whether or not to pick up his fifth-year option before he's even able to start to play any meaningful games. The Falcons' best-case scenario is that Cousins gets hurt again, has some big injury, and they can turn to Penix and then shout out at the rooftops how everyone was wrong, see how smart they were, we knew what we were doing, we needed Penix to come in. Teams cannot afford to spend that much capital on a backup player, hoping, I don't know, that he'll have to be forced into service. This is not what contending teams do. You had made the move already. You were a good team with no quarterback. You overpaid for an over-the-hill veteran because you knew he could bring stability, some talent, and win more games. You'd already done it. You're at 8. Just take a really special player. There's so many to choose from still. And put them in your offense, and then run and watch what happens. If Cousins gets hurt year one, and you stink, get the quarterback next year. Do it again the following year. You'll be in the exact same position. The timing of this is ridiculous. The pick is ridiculous. The player is not guaranteed in any way, shape, or form to be successful. added to the fact of the injury questions that he has, it's so bad, and I won't hear it. I won't hear it from the Falcons justifying it. I won't hear it from, like, one out of every 10 podcasts saying, well, actually, I'm not leaning into the well actuallys. No, it's wrong. Maybe it works by a miracle where Cousins gets hurt year one, Penix comes in as an amazing, and then you just pay Cousins $100 million anyway. None of it makes sense. It's bad. It's terrible. And, you know, that's what the NFC South does, seemingly. A lot of teams in the NFC South. That's the land of bad decisions. And the Falcons made a terrible one, in my opinion. And I don't see any path where it ends up looking like a successful idea.
So, I agree with you, Antonio. I think this is ridiculous. I'm not playing devil's advocate. I'm saying I understand where they're seeing the vision. I believe Fontenot he might have explicitly mentioned the Packers model, but obviously the Packers are the team that comes to mind for everyone when you think of drafting a quarterback when you already have a decent starter. They drafted Aaron Rodgers 24th overall in 2005, and he sat him for 3 years. Jordan Love, same thing, sat for three full seasons. They drafted him 26th overall in 2020. You know what the difference is? I just told you they drafted quarterbacks with two picks in the mid-20s. They took Penix 8th overall, and that's why I disagree with it, Antonio, for exactly what you said, because by signing Cousins, you're saying, we're ready to compete now. I don't know that you can think of Penix, and maybe he becomes this, and if so, I guess that's good, but he doesn't jump off the page as, like, Rodgers was the second quarterback drafted in that draft. It was Alex Smith went one overall. Is it going to be him or Rodgers? Smith went one, and Rodgers fell all the way to the mid-20s. You are taking, by all accounts, either QB 4 or 5, depending on how people rated them, at 8th overall, and then saying, oh, we don't need him. The whole idea of signing Kirk Cousins was we're competing right now. And if you wanted to compete now, you add a stud player, possibly a pass rusher, as had been mocked widely to them, Dallas Turner, Laiatu, first defensive player off the board, anyone to help your defense, or a stud offensive lineman. Only Joe Alt, right, had come off the board by that point, I believe, or I guess Latham had come off too. But yeah, it's just ridiculous, and it's like, I see what you're I see the vision. It's the Packers model. But you're also drafting, Jordan Love turned 25 midway through last season, his first as a starter in the NFL.
And Chase, just on that, because I'm not going to need to echo after what you guys are saying here, but I just want to add on that too, the Packers model part. You're talking about Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, who had, like, command and respect in that room, and obviously it pissed Rodgers off. He ended up winning two MVPs and whatever. Kirk Cousins is not that same situation. You didn't just pay this newcomer guy who's just coming into the building, who's just trying to get his feet, all this guaranteed money, and then picked another guy 8. Like, the Love thing, it's obviously worked out, but that was way different. Also, too, by the way, just on that too, the Packers model thing. I can't remember who the GM now is. It's escaping my mind for the Packers. Guntukus now, yeah. for them, and then whoever they picked whenever it was.
I think it was Ted Thompson back then, probably.
Ted Thompson. They don't have to answer to an owner. They are the only team in the National Football League that doesn't have to answer to an owner. And all you have to do is look at the video of Terry Fontenot, the GM of the Falcons, having to explain to Arthur Blank, the Dracula of the National Football League, what he just did, of Arthur Blank going like, 1, 2, 3, this is how much money I paid Kirk Cousins. And then you go, what? Oh yeah, all that money you just put in escrow? That $100 million you just put in escrow for Kirk Cousins? Yeah, it's fine. We're just going to take another quarterback. It's fine. If you had Penix on your board this high the whole time, don't sign Cousins. It makes no sense.
Well,
sorry.
That's the other thing for me, Tim. It's like, clearly it just feels like bad process, because either your plan the entire time was to sign Kirk Cousins and also draft a quarterback, or you just fell in love with a quarterback and let that blind you to everything. And with Penix in particular, I think I'd even understand taking a quarterback at 8, more if you took McCarthy, who is only 21. Like, Penix turns 24 in like a week and a half. So, like you said, Antonio, he's going to be like, if Cousins plays and plays how well you think he can and you're competing, like, Penix is not going to see the field until he's 26, 27, 28 years old. And then, I don't know. It's, you know, quarterback careers are longer than ever, but they're not that long. And so typically the idea of Penix was he was probably the most ready to start and play quarterback in this draft. You know, he's the one of the, besides Daniels, one of the older prospects at QB. And so that's just the other thing that confuses me. I'm like, maybe I could talk myself into it if you took McCarthy, who's 21 years old and only a starter for like two seasons, basically had lost one game in all of college. I could get talked into that because like timelines and all that. But yeah, taking the oldest quarterback to then sit him while also seemingly maybe pissing off the guy you just signed. And it just creates a whole bunch of mess. And I touched on it earlier, but yeah, just to put a bow on it, I guess, the whole idea of signing Kirk Cousins is you're competing now and you made a pick that is not about competing now. So it just seems like a conflict of ideas in the Falcons front office. And I don't know what's happening. I wish them luck. I think they're going to win the division regardless because it's a very strange division. So it could work out for them in that way. That's a bunch of not great teams you're competing with. You're competing with an owner who's popping around Charlotte, taking people's hats off. You know, like it's not the hardest division in football, certainly. So yeah, maybe it works for them. But I just think to be like a win now team, it was just such a, to make a not win now move, it was very confusing. But I will say, I loved it for the draft. Like I said, this is the most confusing, surprising. There's not a mock draft in America, I believe, that had predicted Michael Penix to the Falcons. And if that person's out there, I hope you played the lottery that day too, because that was like one of the more just crazier draft things. When that first, I think it was Schefter on the broadcast was like, they might be going QB here, and you're like, what? Yeah.
Which, by the way, just quickly, like, I get Schefter has to do that, so like at that point you kind of know, but I try and avoid Twitter because I hate people that tip picks here, and like the NFL's kind of cracked down on it, but then people still obviously do it. And I really hate that you're trying to, basically, I'm on my phone because I don't want to have like a tweet deck or something open that's live because I want to try and avoid tipping picks. But then it's like, oh, seventh pick, J.C. Latham or whatever. So I'm like, oh, I want to go to Twitter and like see the reactions because I'm an addict and I want to be part of this community that Elon Musk is trying to destroy each and every day. And I want to see like what's going on there. And then you get there and all of a sudden it's like, oh, and then Penix to the Falcons. I'm like, come on, man. Like, just ruins the drama of it. Stop tipping picks. It's so annoying.
Yeah, I listened to so many shows previewing the Falcons pick saying, look, Falcons, don't do anything foolish and take another skill position player. Just get a defensive player. You have holes on the defensive side of the ball. Get a pass rusher, an offensive lineman. And they said, like, watch this. No. Watch
what historically bad at sacking the quarterback. Like, historically bad over the last 5 years or so.
And also, the Packers, my last pushback, just because I don't think it's that hard. The Packers stuff, both scenarios with the Packers were wildly different with the quarterbacks that were in the building. The Favre stuff, he was a city icon, a state icon that was over the hill that they were kind of trying to push out of the building.
Well, and threatening to retire, like, every season back times. Then.
And again, as Jace mentioned, it's late 20s. The Love one, almost the same exact situation with Rodgers. Over the hill, was grumbling about money all the time, was grumbling about the players that they were drafting in early rounds to help him. They were giving him like shorter term deals. It was becoming this weird like 1 year deal to 1 year with an option, 2 years with an option. Every year they were rediscussing it. So they took a quarterback who was 21 years old at the time so that it would dovetail perfectly into a few years down the road. He had this great season as, you know, a quote-unquote rookie. Fourth year. And he's now 25 years old. You have Penix, who maybe will be the quote-unquote starter, like the guy that they've given the keys to at 27 years old, coming off of two destroyed knees, two destroyed shoulders. Okay.
I wish him luck.
I wish that whole organization, so yeah, luck.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company. Serving collectors since 1945.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's talk about teams that do things better than that. And I can say that unflinchingly. And it's our team. It's the Baltimore Ravens. Let's get into these picks that they made throughout the draft. Overall thoughts at the top. Tim mentioned it. I don't think we have a ton of Pro Bowlers, future Pro Bowlers from this draft class. But I think we got starters. I think we hit doubles as opposed to home runs. And that's okay with this roster. They already have the blue chip players on both sides of the ball. What they needed to address was depth and getting replacement level starters at a few holes on the roster, and they did that. I think there's three or four guys who will be starters or near starting roles next season, have games where they start at least. But I doubt that we end up, you know, 5 years down the road looking back on this draft class counting Pro Bowls. If I had to bet it somewhere, I would do like under 1.5, I think, would be my number that I'd be comfortable with. I could see, may they be plentiful. May they be 5 to 7 Pro Bowls from this class, but I don't see it. But let's go through it to where at least what these guys can do, what the expectations will be for these players. And let's start at the top. Round one. Nailed it with the mock draft. Nate Wiggins, corner out of Clemson. Things I liked, looking at some tape after the draft. The height, the physicality, the ability to cover. Things I did not like. Stone hands. A lot of dropped INTs that I saw. And I can just see the yellow flags flying. I have a hunch he is going to be a pass interference magnet as a rookie because he's physical. But he's also handsy, and there were a handful of plays I saw where the announcers were saying, wow, what great coverage, and then they did a replay, and it was like, oh, could have been called, and it wasn't, where the home team, not Clemson, the fans are like going crazy because it was really pass interference. I have a hunch we're going to see a couple of those from Nate Wiggins early in his career, but obviously some good things here, and the analysts love this pick, hopefully not just because it's the Ravens picking it, but they absolutely loved Wiggins to the Ravens at 30 overall.
Which is certainly a thing, by the way, that Antonio mentioned. It's like, we love it because we're Ravens fans and we gobble it up, but everything you hear, oh, the Ravens just did it again. They sit pat and let a good player fall to them. Like, it's every single person who's giving us, you know, a solid B+, or shout out Mel Kiper, yeah, all A. You know, they all say the same thing. Oh, the Ravens just were really patient. I don't know. Sometimes that's a little hindsight bias or a little looking back at the past, I should say. But yeah, Wiggins, I'll disagree with you slightly on one thing, and I'll start there. The physicality thing is the thing that kind of worries me. There's been a couple reports, and a lot of this, you know, you get from Dane Brugler, who writes this magnificent just encyclopedia called The Beast every year for these prospects. And many scouts say that he loves to stay on blocks, especially in the run game, because my man doesn't want to tackle. Makes me a bit nervous. That being said, I thought about that initially, and then I go, oh, wait, Marlon Humphrey, Kyle Hamilton, Justin Madubuike, and Roquan Smith are on this team. Maybe he won't need to tackle that much or just kind of get in late and try and do the little strip the ball thing. Seemed like a bit of a playmaker in terms of the ball. I totally agree on like kind of the stone hands thing, but it's always around it. So as long as we're deflecting passes, I'm pretty happy with that. The size and the speed are just absolutely remarkable, and I think is something that made him really stand out. I think it's a nice plug and play outside corner, which, you know, we were kind of talking about, you know, a Cooper DeJean there, right, when he was still on the board and obviously fell to round two. But I think that's kind of who I wanted at that spot. But then when you think about it, you know what? Cooper DeJean is kind of your hybrid safety slot corner type of guy. Well, they have that in Kyle Hamilton, and they have a guy who's really good in the slot in Marlon Humphrey. Let's get the guy you could just stick on the outside. And if you have three cornerbacks on the field, which you do a lot of the time, you either have Marlon and Nate Wiggins outside with Kyle Hamilton in the slot. Still need that third safety. Or you have Marlon bump inside Brandon Stevens, who had a very good year last year and is in a contract year. So something tells me he's going to be really good this year. And Nate Wiggins on the outside as well. I think it's nice that instead of him being the guy that gives you the options, he frees up other guys to have options because you stick him on that island outside. I do love this, again, reading right from Brugler, from an NFL scout quote. He's the type of competitor you love on your squad, but despise him if he's on the other team. Loves getting in the head of receivers. Yup, sign me up. Another nasty, dirty Ravens player who's just going to do everything to scratch and claw for an advantage that every team absolutely despises. Checks boxes for me all over the place. And then just because I know Jace is going to give a much more intelligent answer here. I didn't love that Dapo Sweeney was bothering the Ravens the entire night to draft Nate Wiggins. So if you don't know Dabo Sweeney, the Clemson head coach, the story came out afterwards and the Ravens said this, that Dabo wouldn't leave them alone and just kept texting Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh about like, hey, got to draft my guy Nate Wiggins. You got to draft him. That's definitely not a Dabo. I don't have a Dabo. But that kind of bothers me. I'm like, Dabo, like, go to church. Like, get out of here. Like, I don't need you here right now. We like your guy. We already do. Like, shut up. I hope none of that convinced the Ravens in any sort of way subconsciously. You know, obviously they're professionals, and I jest a little bit there. But that was kind of worrisome when I saw that. But think for your old head Ravens fans. Basically, the comparison here for Nate Wiggins is as a guy who long, athletic, speedy, has some ball skills, maybe doesn't love to tackle, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. So that's kind of what people keep comping him to. I've seen that a couple of times. So I'm cool with that. That works.
Yeah, both Brugler and Daniel Jeremiah had Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. So that seems to be, they must have locked in on that. But, you know, with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, he made two Pro Bowls and had 30 interceptions in his career. I will take that if that's what
I'd lose my 1.5 Pro Bowl bet just right there.
Yeah, I'll take that if that's what our 30th pick becomes. The only thing, so they clearly loved Wiggins. I don't know if we mentioned it. They turned, at least based on how the broadcast showed the clock, they turned the pick in about within 15 seconds. It was very quick. Eric DaCosta claimed after the first round that they turned down 8 different offers to trade back. Now, I don't know how many that's the same team calling them like 5 times or whatnot, but the number he said was 8. So clearly they loved him. The only thing, some things I'd like to add is I don't think we can undersell the speed. We've mentioned speed. He ran the second fastest 40 at the combine, was one of the fastest ever, and he was pretty much the story of the running day until Xavier Worthy came through and ran the fastest 40 we've ever seen. That kind of stole all the headlines. But Wiggins was number 2, and you read like The Beast and some other write-ups, and basically every write-up is he's super fast and great at his job and a pure cover corner. But he's thin. He's really thin. He's around 6'1", 170-ish pounds. That is light. And as Tim kind of mentioned, that could be a problem, seems like, particularly in the run game, which could be a sticking point with one John Harbaugh, I can imagine. But besides that, and they made a point, DaCosta literally said, "whole gain weight." That was like a direct quote he said. So they're aware of it. But there are definitely concerns there with his frame, but that seems to be the only concern people have. People say, like all the write-ups are like, as a corner, he's great. And you would like that interception number maybe to be a little higher. He had 3-2 off of Drake May randomly in his college career, the 3rd overall pick. So is that good or bad? Who's to say? Took 2 of his 3 career interceptions to the house. So a speed. Obviously, the big highlights that were getting shown is his chase down, forced fumbles, I believe 2 different games this past season. So it's definitely speed. And I found that interesting just with Wiggins in particular is with a guy like Tim, you mentioned Cooper DeJean still on the board, but Cooley McKinstry, right? He was still on the board, and a big physical Alabama corner. That just in my mind is so much what the Ravens gravitate towards. But the fact that Wiggins is kind of unlike a lot of sort of Ravens corners of yesteryear and present, frankly, that kind of intrigues me. He's all about the speed. He's not, as you guys said, not afraid to play physical. Definitely needs to bulk up. We'll see if it works. You know, I think he was even skinnier. Emmanuel Forbes last year, who the Commanders took, has not worked out for them to this point. So there's definitely concerns. But on the whole, I just you watch the highlights and I'm just intrigued by the speed and the coverage, the pure coverage ability. And he seems like he could be a good player. And I think, Timmy, you said it. It kind of seems like it's almost a pick that also makes a transition year for Marlon Humphrey. I think we do see Marlon kind of become a permanent inside guy, kind of struggled with injuries last year. So all the way around, I thought this was a real solid pick. And I've really talked myself into it. but I do think just the speed and his coverage ability, I'm intrigued by it. So, and then just final thing, he had a few funny quotes, but this man said, "I thought I was going to be Cam Newton. It turns out that I'm a cornerback." Perfect. No notes. That's a great quote. So, you know, maybe he'll become a character too, as we've seen Kyle Hamilton, if you've been on Twitter at all lately, is slowly becoming Marlon 2.0 on Twitter.
He's hanging out with Marlon Humphrey way too much. Yeah, that's what's happening.
So, I guess just to put a bow on it, Nate Wiggins, fast. Needs to bulk up, but otherwise should be a pretty solid cover corner, and yeah, hopefully it doesn't take too many penalties.
Future John Harbaugh doghouse member Nate Wiggins after a pass interference and then a bad wrap-up tackle on a run play. I gotta just say that. And then where was Nate for the entire second half? But yeah, my goodness, 6'1", and ran 4.28. We like that. We like that. All right, next pick. Roger Rosengarten. Sounds like an offensive lineman, is an offensive lineman. Tackle out of Washington. Ravens take him in the second round. I watched some of old Roger after the draft, and it was just solid. Everything was solid. That was my takeaway. He will be a humdrum starter on this line, very likely at right tackle. And may he have a successful, boring career where we rarely hear about him and he plays 4 years with the team before signing a large deal somewhere else to play right tackle.
Yeah, the Rick Wagner playbook, I think we call that.
There you go.
I'm completely with you. It is interesting. The one thing that obviously sort of jumps out to me, speed was kind of a theme. We'll get to another guy that was fast. This is the fastest lineman at the draft. Ran a 4.92 40-yard dash. The other thing that sticks out, he didn't give up a sack in his 2 years as a starter at Washington. That's what you generally want to see. And I think, you know, while he started at right tackle, his quarterback, the aforementioned Michael Penix at Washington, who we just talked a lot about, lefty. So he was blocking his blind side. And so he has 2 years as a starter, and in theory, because he was a blindside protector, maybe potential future versatility, though I'm imagining he'll most likely lock into that right tackle spot. They're certainly not going to give him the job immediately, just it's a Harbaugh team, they're going to have a battle for it, but it seems like he has the inside track, certainly, to be the starting right tackle week one, and they clearly liked him. They took him over some other guys, but it's not too much else to add about him. He's a fast kind of athletic guy, gets after it in the run game a little bit, or can, you know, Brugler mentioned in his write-up just a lot of pulling and all that, good at screens, that kind of thing. Maybe we'll finally figure that out as a franchise. Not too much else to say about him personally, but mainly just the fact that he was a right tackle who didn't give up sacks, and you need a right tackle. It seems like a good match.
Yeah, it's interesting. So he's another relative athletic score guy, or an RAS score, which if you've been diving into the draft stuff, like if you're super nerdy about this, you already know what this is. I admittedly don't have like all the explanations, but essentially these guys get graded on this new score based on all their different, you know, combine numbers and height, weight, length, all this stuff, and it grades out to an athletic, a relative athletic score. And the Ravens took a lot of high, like 90s guys, 90 to 100 out of 100 guys in this draft, and Rosengarten being another one of them. A couple things here. So one, I talked about the same thing with Wiggins. It's very much giving other guys options. So Rosengarten is not, you know, and obviously some of these guys, Steelers and the Bengals got some of these guys too, these linemen who are versatile, like Troy Fatanu, or Fatanu, apologies, the Washington guard tackle, of like can move all over the line, can play left tackle, can play both guards, even can play some right tackle. Rosengarten doesn't really seem like that. Jace made the great point about being a blindside protector, so maybe you put him on the left, but a lot of people were projecting the Ravens to find a guy that they could kick inside to play guard if needed or fill any spot on the line, whether it's the two guard spots or the right tackle. Looks like Rosengarten is just the right tackle. So shout out the current guards on the roster, your Ben Clevelands, your Andrew Voorhees, Sala, because I'm not going to do the full name, out of Oregon, Josh Jones, who they just signed out of Houston. It seems like they're pretty high on those guys, especially based on what they did, you know, the rest of the draft, which is not take a guard. So maybe they think that these guys are good enough to compete for camp, maybe not have as much on Daniel Falele, and obviously Rosengarten falls to them at that spot. That's where they end up taking him. The other thing I think is interesting, we talked about the Chiefs kind of trading up and making moves. Right after this is the trade I mentioned before in the second round. So with the 62nd pick, we took Rosengarten. With the 63rd pick, the Niners are like, yeah, I know we just lost in the Super Bowl, but come on up and trade up with the Chiefs. And the Chiefs automatically, like, instantly take Kingsley Suamatia, who is the tackle out of BYU, who also projects to be a right tackle. Now, Suamatia apparently is more of a project, but has way more physical skills, is a mauler, is a type of guy that they could develop and then turn into a starter for the next 10 years. That will be very interesting to see how this plays out over the course of the next, whatever, their rookie contract, so their next 4 years or so. Rosengarten looks like the more solid pick to start from day one when we kick things off in August, but Suamatia might be the better player. So something to watch there and something that could be relatively annoying. But overall, like, I saw Roger Rosengarten go off the board. There, and people are saying, like, oh, yeah, plug and play, right tackle starter from day one. I'm like, sign me up. Another starting hole, like Antonio said, another double to left center that we're just piling up here. And I think, it, you know, overall, very exciting after the first two rounds.
We said in our mock, where we did the first round mock, we really hoped that the Ravens were not going to take Penn State edge Chop Robinson because we obviously have some sour tastes in our mouths from the other Penn State edge that the Ravens took a few years ago, Odafe Owe, who has not exactly panned out. So in the third round, the Ravens took Adisa Isaac, the other edge that Penn State had, who basically has played second fiddle to Chop Robinson throughout this draft process because of the athletic measurables and potential stuff looking years ahead. But the stats are interesting. The actual production numbers at Penn State last year are interesting. The first number is Isaac, who was a third round, you know, mock guy, and Chop Robinson, who was an end of the first round guy. The first number is Isaac. The second one is Robinson. 7.5 sacks versus 4. 16 tackles for loss versus 7.5. 37 tackles versus 15. And I will say, to be fair, Isaac did play 13 games to Robinson's 10. But still, I'm intrigued by this pick. I am ready to get hurt again by another Penn State edge rusher. But the numbers were there, and looking at him on the field, it was a little intriguing for a third-round selection who maybe can make some noise as an edge rusher for the Ravens.
One of the stats that jumped out to me in particular, Antonio, is Jamison Hensley had this on Isaac. He said Isaac got pressure in 2.5 seconds or less on 11% of his rushes, which was second in the FBS last season. That's, you know, that's kind of the name of the game in today's NFL. I know, as much as I complain about having sacks and getting sacks and stuff, pressures are important too.
Talking out of both sides of your mouth there.
Yeah, I know. But I guess if I have some concerns, He is the older. We didn't mention this. Nate Wiggins, one of the youngest prospects of the NFL, doesn't even turn 21 until August. You know, Rosengarten, another 21-year-old. Isaac is a 5-year college guy. Could that have helped his past season production? Maybe. That remains to be seen. So maybe I have a little concern there. But generally, personally, I still always gravitate towards the guys who do have the production, do have the sack numbers. And that's where I think, you know, certainly Isaac's plenty intriguing. I don't have too much to add on him, but Tim would like your perspective. But this was the most of the first three rounds. This was certainly the pick that made me go, fine. And I think it's that residual Penn State sort of edge rusher fear, as it were. But yeah, I wasn't particularly moved either way, but grand scheme, they need edge rushers. Of the guys on the board, he was basically the best left. So from that perspective, I think it's a solid pick. They certainly needed to address the position in some way. And yeah, that's how the draft works. If you wait until the third round to pick probably what I would say is your third area of need, you get second and third tier talent. So that's just how it goes.
And the first two needs were offensive line and corner, which they addressed in those earlier picks. A couple things on this. Some on field, some off that... You know, intriguing is the wrong word, but I kind of connect with, I think, a little bit. First off, we can't be hurt. He's a third round pick. Like, he can't hurt me. If he turns out great, then fantastic. And what the hell do we do with the Dafeo way? And if he turns out bad, never pick a player from Penn State ever again. Like, it's just that simple. But Antonio mentioned it. Production for me. He's a disruptive pass rusher who is a guy who can already kind of set the edge in the run game, which I love. Jared Johnson, all-time that guy Raven, who was amazing at setting the edge in the run, something that Jadeveon Clowney did very well last year for the Ravens before his departure to Tepperland. but he was a second-team All-Big Ten player this year. He led the team. The stats that Antonio mentioned, his tackles for loss and sacks, were leading the team as well. He was, at least for Dane Brugler, who was one of the best out there from The Athletic, he was their 65th. His 65th rated player. The Ravens got him at 93. And, you know, for me, and then also just the off the field stuff too. And look, there's a lot of really cool stories because a lot of these guys, this is their dream. They've come through some really tough stuff. But not only is he a team captain at Penn State, you have all the NFL scouts, again, just reading from Dane Brugler. Phenomenal kid. His family is everything for him. Football is more of a means of an end. But his family, it drives him great to be out there. And the reason that, you know, that's kind of the case, if you don't know, he has two older brothers and a younger sister who are all special needs and all are nonverbal. And for me, just with personal connections and what have you, to kind of see that stuff, Penn State put something out that made me bawl, of just kind of, he kind of went through his motivation of why that gives him the extra drive to succeed and getting to see, like, his siblings, like, kind of root for him behind him and they get to form this bond through football and everything. It's sappy. I totally get it. He could turn out to be an absolute bust and never have a sack in his life. But I tell you what, I'm rooting my ass off for him because of that. And it would be really, really cool to see it work. Will it? Who knows? Third round pick. Again, Antonio, he can't hurt you. He's a third round pick, late third round pick. If it works out, great. If not, you know, it was a flyer.
And he certainly will have opportunities to stick and to shine. There are snaps needed at edge, especially as maybe a reserve type player, but we'll see. The next pick, my favorite.
Sorry. Wait a minute. We forgot to mention one thing. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you and to turn this back completely around. The moment of the NFL draft came with this pick, and we forgot to mention it. Shout out Haloti Ngata, who came out in his Ravens hat, humble as ever, brought his three kids out with him, and said, my kids were born in Baltimore, so they learned one thing, and they go by one saying, and his kids go into the microphone and scream, Steelers suck. I've never jumped off the couch and hooted and hollered more at an NFL draft than I did in that moment. Even when the Ravens got, like, Lamar Jackson. Like, I wasn't as hyped as I was to hear Haloti not his kids do that. So shout out Haloti. Raising his boys the right way. Love that.
Yeah, that, cue the Leonardo DiCaprio meme on the couch, like pointing at the television. I don't know if you guys, that was I think all of us. The fourth round pick, I was going to say, is my favorite, but I meant that kind of in jest. Devontez Walker is a wide receiver from North Carolina, and I'm just going to read you a small excerpt of his ESPN write-up post-draft, or was it pre-draft? Pre-draft. His pre-draft write-up. Walker has dropped some passes on tape, is not a polished route runner, and is lean. But he had a strong combine where he recorded the fourth fastest 40 time, second best broad jump, and fifth best vertical jump for the receivers. End quote. Devontez, you are the Ravens' next gunner on special teams, and I hope you are excited about that role, because I have questions outside of that type of role. Use your speed, Tez. They call him Tez Walker, which I do enjoy. Use your speed, Tez. Get downfield and try to make a tackle, because I have some concerns about a fourth-round pick who can't run well, can't run routes well, and has some drops in his history. I have my concerns about him panning out with the Ravens, especially given their track record of not drafting very good wide receivers.
I have all these same concerns, Antonio. Also, apologies to the listener. They're quite literally, if you could hear it, they're just aggressively mowing and
giving people a feel, Jace, a feel for downtown Frederick.
Yeah, just mowing and like literal leaf blower like 2 feet outside my window. So I don't know if it's picking up at all, but it's very distracting to me, so my apologies. But no, with Walker, yeah, it's, I could see this being one of the most frustrating players, and I see the vision, you know, speed off the top, you know, and then Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman to work underneath, and it all, it makes sense in my head, but I just, it's like, for what you said, like, his weak points, like, catching the ball, route running, that's not great. It's basically, he is a vertical threat who is good at catching deep balls. He had the only catch of 20-plus yards on our first-round pick, Nate Wiggins, in all of 2023. So, he has speed. He's, as you said, very fast. Can take the top off the defense. Can we get him the ball? I don't know that we can. Throwing deep is, like, the worst thing Lamar Jackson does. At least accurately, consistently, or one of them. I feel like the amount of times we're going to see a five-yard ball, a ball thrown 5 yards past Devontez Walker is going to be high. I don't know if it'll work, but I do still think he has some tools that are intriguing. Maybe he can improve on that. They did need a wide receiver, and again, it's the thing with the draft. If you wait till the fourth round, there's less options. So, you know, he's a big name. He had a kind of very strange, he actually would have been more productive, but he had a weird battle with the NCAA. For some reason, they wouldn't approve his eligibility immediately this past season. So that could have impacted sort of his final year production too. And he still had decent production, both at North Carolina and his previous stop at Kent State. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm not super optimistic whole workout, but I'm sure there'll be like one or two plays, like Lamar will hit him in like week two and you'll think like this will be the greatest thing of all time on a deep ball, and it might just not materialize into much. So I'm not super optimistic, but they did need to draft a wide receiver. He has some tools that make him intriguing. I'm not certain it'll work for us.
I mean, I'm looking at the list of guys who were taken in terms of receiver after Tez Walker. And just based on, you know, following the draft to the degree I do, which is, you know, I wouldn't call myself an expert, but listening to a ton of podcasts and reading stuff and what have you, being just a casual fan of it, I don't think there was anybody left on the board that I would have taken over him. And I don't know. This is so weird that I'm being the optimist in this whole thing comparatively. Again, guys, he's a fourth-round pick. Yeah. Like, if it works, it works. He played 28 games in college, and like, including only, 8 games in his senior year at North Carolina, or his last year at North Carolina, I should say, because the NCAA wouldn't let him play because of some BS transfer thing. So, yeah, of course he's a little bit raw in his route tree. But you know what he does? He takes the top off of defense, and to have that element, like you build your wide receiver room like a basketball team. You need some big guys. You need some guys that can get through the lane and kind of make guys miss and what have you. Really good with crossovers, but might not want to get right into the paint against the big dudes. You want dudes who can just fly down the court and make plays. I could see it, like Jay said. I could see it. And again, it might not work. But he's a fourth-round pick, and the Ravens suck at drafting receivers. So, like, I don't know. I was cool with it, and I think for me, the intention, just before you go, Jace, I like the combination of, and who knows about best player available, even though whenever they cut to the Ravens draft room, you could see the writing on the wall. Now, you'd have to zoom in. But I was like, can we move that to like a different camera angle?
That's like every year with them. It's always in the background of their shots.
Every other draft room, you can't see the names written up. Now, you could see it, and I'm sure the Ravens make sure, like, hey, make sure that's kind of blurred out. But, you know, these teams could hire, like, FBI agents to go in there and pause the TiVo it and zoom in really far about where the Ravens were. But anyway, so my point is, they can say best player available. We don't know. The Ravens typically do that, as we've seen over the years. But it was a mix of best player available, if you believe that that's what they were doing, and addressing needs. Corner, tackle, edge, receiver are your first four picks. Your top four needs, in any particular order, corner, tackle, edge, receiver. And they did that. So I find it hard to be disappointed. And maybe it was also because I knew who Tez Walker was. So I was like, oh, hell yeah, I know that guy. That guy's sick. And I'm sure that plays a little bit of a part, obviously. But I don't know. For what was there and for addressing the need and for kind of how he fits into that wide receiver room, I like it. So let's see what happens.
No, and that's all very fair, Tim. And I think you are right. Like, as a fourth-round pick, we can't have too many expectations. And like you said, I liked his, like, watching North Carolina games, he definitely jumped off the page. He was one of, if you were just popping into a North Carolina game, you'd notice Drake May and you'd notice Tez Walker, and that'd be about it. But this stat just, I don't know if I'm purposely wanting to bring the vibes down, but this stat from Jameson Hensley jumped out to me. That Walker is the ninth receiver selected in the fourth round by the Ravens, which is tied for the second most since the Ravens' first draft in 1996. The only one to become a starter was Brandon Stokely in 1999, and this just sent me down a dark path of, well, who were the Ravens' other fourth round wide receivers on this illustrious list? And Stokely was the first, but we have a man named Marcus Smith, apparently drafted in 2010, no recollection. Chris Moore, our good friend Chris Moore. Demetrius Williams, Ron Johnson, Tandon Doss, all-time legend of random Ravens.
Joe Flacco's favorite receiver in that draft, by the way, Tandon Doss.
Current Raven Tylan Wallace, forgot he was a fourth-round pick. And Jaleel Scott rounds it out. So, I don't know. That makes me feel less good. But on its surface, I'd say, remembering almost nothing about any of these guys, Devontae Walker is definitely like the most talented, at least tools guy of that. So maybe he can certainly become something. But I do agree with your larger point, Tim. It was, you know, the draft's all about best player available in areas of need. And I think Walker certainly helps fill one of their big areas of need. And will probably lead to some back of the roster shuffling on wide receivers, because he'll make the team unless something really weird happens in preseason, a Caillou Blue Kelly situation. So that was just my dark little rabbit hole I went down on fourth round receivers. But on the whole, you know, I agree with Tim. Can't get too upset about a fourth round receiver. It's proper value for what some of his limitations are.
All right, I'm going to put these two guys, next two picks, together, because they are two players that I think will be getting snaps on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. One is the second selection the Ravens made in the fourth round, and then the second one is their fifth round pick, starting with TJ Tampa, the corner out of Iowa State. He had a second round grade by basically everybody, and then some things happen that my co-hosts will address a little bit, and then he ends up falling to the fourth, and the Ravens say, yes, please, and they will take a second corner. I liked what I saw from him, to be honest. I expect him to be getting snaps at some point as a rookie at his actual position. And then in the fifth round, Rasheen Ali, the running back out of Marshall, speed to burn, shiftiness, compact frame, he will end up averaging 5 yards per carry, averaging like 3 to 4 carries per game. That's my prediction coming to you right now, because after teams get punched in the mouth by Derrick Henry over and over and over again, Ali will come in the third quarter
and like get a 25-yard run, and the crowd's going to go crazy, and they're going to think, oh my gosh, we have a third down back. I'm intrigued in both of these picks, guys. What do you think of them?
Yeah, I think, Tim, you have more info just on Tampa. So I'll start with Ali, actually, just because I saw this from Jonah Schaffer, and it both extremely intrigued me. It also led to a slight concern. So he had this. Rasheen Ali led the FBS with 7 plays of 50-plus yards last season. 6 runs, 1 catch. Fumbles and durability concerns hurt his draft stock. And so with that, what he's referring to with that, Ali suffered a biceps injury at the Senior Bowl, so he didn't test at the Combine. And I think that combination of fumbling issues with explosiveness could lead to this being a maddening player, because I think he has a pretty high ceiling, and I completely agree with you. Well, A, they needed a running back. We knew they were going to draft a running back. Eric DaCosta basically said it going into the draft. I think it's a good value. It's a guy with a lot of production. I believe he was one of the highest touchdown guys 2 years ago.
So in 2021, Jace, he had 23 touchdowns. He led FBS in rushing touchdowns.
Led, okay, yeah. So very productive. Seems to have nice explosiveness, especially this past season with, I mentioned, those 7 explosive plays. But the fumbling thing, that's just going to be that. And like, I admittedly don't know so much where he stands on the whole, pass protection standpoint, but we know that's a particular thorn for John Harbaugh, because that made Tyson Williams disappear completely after a seemingly strong start. So I do think he'll be very much in the mix, like you said, especially because I am not a Keaton Mitchell believer, just in the sense that anyone who thinks he's going to do anything of particular note this season, I think is wrong. He suffered a serious injury on, what, Christmas Eve, right? It was like way late in the year. So I don't think we're going to see as much Keaton Mitchell this season as people seem to think, or that he'll be all that good, because it seems to take basically a year and a half, 2 years to get these injuries straightened out for a lot of guys. So I think he will get a lot of time, because otherwise it's Derrick Henry and Justice Hill is still around. So I do think we'll see a lot of Rasheen Ali, but I could see him being just a player that just could frustrate pretty much. He'll frustrate me the second he puts the ball on the ground for the first time, I'll say that. But hopefully it's later rather than like his first game or something.
So it's funny with Ali, first off, of he kind of seemed like the scat backy type when you read everything and then, you watch some of the highlights and what have you. It's like, oh, okay, this guy is the Keaton Mitchell for Derrick Henry this year. Because I agree. Jace, I don't think it was Christmas, because I think that was the Niners game was Christmas. And he got injured in the Chargers game.
Okay.
Whatever. Late in the year. Whatever it is. You don't need to, debate over semantics. I just don't want people coming after you.
Yeah, I couldn't remember which game it was. So my apologies.
But with Ali, I find it interesting. One thing I did find interesting, I was listening on Monday to just the Ringer's kind of recap, and Ben Solak, who's one of their draft guys, said they were doing like superlatives, and one was like the rookie who could rush for the most yards or make the most impact. It wasn't rush for the most yards, but it was something where he took it a different way and said, I want to talk about Rasheen Ali a little bit, because the Ravens just found their Gus Edwards. And I thought that was really intriguing, as he's not necessarily just a scat back. He's also a dude that's just going to average, from 2021 on, 7.4 yards per carry, 5 yards per carry, 7.6 yards per carry. My man's just going to pick up first downs, it seems like, and has a little bit of a different style to Henry, obviously. Clearly has that speed and breakaway ability, as Jace talked about, but also has that, and even Dan Brugler says this on The Beast, he is tough between the tackles as well. Like, he's not just a guy who's going to try and break outside and make the plays that way. He can get it done in the middle of the field too, which I think is interesting. Going back to TJ Tampa, you guys have mentioned it a bit. So obviously almost everybody had a second round grade on him. He falls to the 4th. He did have a really kind of bad pre-draft process. He decided to skip the Senior Bowl, which some people thought was a bit of a bad choice. There's some reports that said that he might've had a lingering hamstring injury, so he didn't want to like make it look like he's worse than he actually is, but he skipped the Senior Bowl. Some people dropped him lower because of that. And then at his pro day, he ran a 4.58, 40, which is a slow 40 time, especially for a corner. But the dude can hit. He's big. He's a very big corner. He's a physical corner. He might be a little over aggressive. Sign me up. I'm fine with that. But he's a downhill guy that likes to make plays. And Jace, as you kind of mentioned here, it's interesting to see the Ravens. I mean, this is typical best player available. And also, we don't believe in Pepe Williams and Jalen Armour Davis. So we might as well just get another corner to line up with Nate Wiggins, a guy who, like, you know, a couple years down the line now, there is a world where it's TJ Tampa on one side and Nate Wiggins on the other side. But like you said, you said it here in our notes, it's really cool to see the Ravens kind of go in two different directions with corners.
Yeah. It's the thing that everyone I saw bring up with Tampa is he's long in the sense that, like, he's just got, like, I saw, like, really long arms for, like, his size. I want to say the number I saw thrown out was, like, 89th percentile or something. And so just their ability to win in different ways is sort of intriguing. We will see this player on special teams. I have no doubt that played a factor in his drafting. Brugler mentioned that he was a jammer on punt return coverage all four seasons. So you know what he'll be doing on the Ravens. He will be
welcome to John Harbaugh's team, buddy.
Yeah, he will be a jammer for the Ravens as well. But I'm intrigued with him. Certainly, you know, I think you see, like, the process why he fell. Maybe he doesn't have quite the same natural gifts as a guy like Wiggins has, but he's also kind of new to the position, which I think's intriguing and something we've seen the Ravens sort of gambling on a little more, certainly with Brandon Stevens, in that he got to Iowa State, he was a receiver, and they switched him over to defensive back. So he hasn't been playing, I'm sure he played defensive back in high school, but he hasn't been, like, you know, his sole position forever. So if he can keep developing, I think, you know, this is definitely a best player available, but I'm also just really happy with it in the sense that, this is a team that just needs corners constantly all the time. And it seems, like you said, Tim, I think we've seen enough out of Jalen Armour Davis and Pepe Williams, or more accurately, I guess, rather, haven't seen enough because they can't stay healthy, that I think it was worth, not really a risk, because by all accounts, seems like a good dude or good enough. But bringing in a guy that maybe fell for some of the pre-draft stuff, because it's a position you need real bad. And I think that certainly he's a guy more in the mold of a lot of what we've seen the Ravens draft, sort of big physical corners, long. Certainly, you know, Brugler pointed out his straight line speed, not the greatest, but I agree with both of you guys. I think we will see this player on the field often, or at least early, certainly if he's healthy. Because we did see a lot of Jalen Armour Davis and Pepe Williams early in 2022, and then they kind of stunk and then got hurt. So, I'm a little more optimistic on Tampa, especially given how high kind of everyone was on him across boards in general, and able to get him in the fourth round. I think it's a real solid pick.
Jalen Armour Davis. I really thought we had something. Really thought we had something there. All right, the last three selections, one in the sixth round, and then the last two, both in the seventh. Devin Leary, quarterback, Kentucky. Nick, see, this is how you know we're in the seventh round, because I don't actually know the pronunciation. Nick Samach? 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 Nick is the center for Michigan State. And then Sanusi Kane, the safety out of Purdue. Sanusi Kane, first team all name, just right off the bat. So that's your scouting report for him. Nick, center for Michigan State. Why do I think he's going to end up, like, grabbing a guard spot, or just, like, being a rotational guard on this line? I could see that happening. And Devin Leary is the interesting one here, the quarterback out of Kentucky. It seems that he was QB coach T. Martin's hand-picked selection as a late round quarterback, and he's going to come in and compete for the QB3 spot. Maybe QB2 with Josh Johnson, but probably QB3 with Malik Cunningham. Unclear. They've been very, very quiet about what Cunningham's role is and what they see for him, whether he's going to be a quarterback, a wide receiver, or kind of where he stands. So another quarterback in the room to compete a little bit. So three interesting players, not a ton of expectations, but some camp challenges and maybe depth pieces down the road.
I was not super surprised by the Leary pick, just knowing after they lose Huntley, knowing the QB situation is Josh Johnson, a man who has been on quite literally, is it 15 teams now? It's a lot. Several tours of duty as the Ravens backup, as I think you mentioned, Antonio, 37 years old. So they needed something. And I think, as you mentioned, that something is not Malik Cunningham. I think the Ravens have come to that decision, it seems like, by drafting Leary. My favorite thing with Leary, just a classic, a trope alert here. He can make every throw. he has a great, he has a great arm. He can make every throw. Will he make every throw? Who's to say? That's kind of the knock on him and why he was a sixth round pick. But I did find it funny that in Brugler's QB rankings, he had Leary ranked as his number 9 quarterback. His number 6 quarterback, who was Michael Penix Jr., went 8th overall. So the Ravens drafted, what was the official number on Leary? Number 218. So a little bit of a difference in value there. Yeah, this was just interesting in that, like, obviously teams, I think I mentioned this, 66 different starting quarterbacks have been through. And we talked after the end of the last regular season, watching that just slog in the rain with Tyler Huntley against that Steelers team, that it might have been time to look in a new direction for backup. And I think Leary's a play on that. You know, I don't love him, but but he's not going to start. That's the great thing about drafting a quarterback when you don't need a starting quarterback. He is your backup quarterback, and that's all he needs to be. So from that sense, I do at least like investing in the position, just because, you know, we've seen Lamar. Last year was great. The prior two seasons did not finish the season. So having a good backup is important. And I think it was long past time to invest in that. I saw they hadn't actually drafted a QB since they drafted Trace McSorley in 2019. So I was fine with the move. I know I'm sure it perturbed some people out there. Tim, I guess, do you have any quick thoughts on Leary?
No, I mean, you need a third quarterback nowadays. The rules allow you to have a third one. So you might as well have a third one. And Malik Cunningham is not that. They said as much in their post-draft pressers and things. So... sure.
yeah, that's pretty much how I
also did. I did see some people were like, why are they taking a quarterback here? Like, I know, well, every pick means something. I know, but like, come on, we're in the what, sixth or seventh round?
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, like, you know, not everyone's gonna like become Chuck Clark, right? Like, that's your best case scenario of a sixth round pick. It's pretty rare. Tom Brady was a sixth round pick once upon a time. There's a reason that you don't draft Tom Brady every year.
Tom Brady. This is what we're looking for in the sixth.
These are both sixth round picks of equal accomplishment in the NFL. Yeah, I don't have too much thoughts on the last two guys, Antonio. Samick, I do think it's interesting just to get another guy in that competition. I guess more the selection of him and the fact that he's a center, you know, certainly seems like he'll make the team because they don't currently have a backup center that I guess isn't Patrick McCary technically in a case of emergency scenario. But the other thing, and we kind of touched on this, is just the pick of him and a center this late in the draft and stuff is that they do seem to be set sort of, I guess this is maybe jumping ahead too much, but just kind of comfortable with where they are with the offensive linemen they have in-house, and certainly they might add a veteran to that. But they do have just a ton of guys around to compete for that job. Like, certainly no first-round picks in that competition, but for the line to still be unsettled, the fact that Samick is like, or Samak, Brugler didn't have a pronunciation in this one, so I got nothing.
Nick.
Yeah. The selection of Nick suggests that... They're kind of comfortable at least with what they have in house to compete for guard. That's, I guess, my biggest takeaway, more than even the player himself. Otherwise, the player, he did suffer an injury late last season that kind of prevented his testing. So it's kind of an interesting flyer in that case, because maybe he tested and he would have tested great, and maybe that sends him shooting up the board earlier. So I think kind of a late round flyer. I think not quite the same level as the Andrew Voorhees flyer, who is one of the guys who will be competing for one of these guard spots, effectively a rookie, basically. You can view that for he's as another draft pick almost, since he didn't play last year. Another one of those guys who will be competing for that spot. So that's really my takeaways. And then, yeah, with Kane, hopefully Battles makes the team. They always need secondary pieces. They don't really have safeties on the roster that aren't Marcus Williams or Kyle Hamilton. So in that sense, he has a good chance of making the team just because they're not very deep at that position.
Yeah, apparently is much more of a run defender at this point too, which, sure, kind of needed more of a center field guy, I think. But, you know, we'll see. Seventh round pick again. You nailed it, and, you know, we don't need to do more on Leary. With old Nick from Michigan State, you nailed that as well. You know, I think backup center is a slight underrated need, and it's very much an underrated need if, God forbid, Tyler Linderbaum goes down, because he is one of the best centers in the National Football League. And I don't want Patrick McCarry ever snapping a football ever again. He's much better in a swing tackle role. We've seen that as well. So, you know, a nice fill there where you don't feel like you need to go address it in this post-draft free agency. So, again, filling a need in a spot where, you know, an underrated position that the Ravens needed to have.
All right, so those are the draft picks. I'm going to kind of run through some remaining holes. We've been talking about it a little bit, the status of the offensive line. And then some fun undrafted free agents. The Ravens, every year, one of them sticks. At least one of them sticks. We get overly excited, too excited. Maybe I get too excited about them, thinking that these are the diamonds in the rough. And then very, very often they do not end up working out. But let's start first with the roster. Because we talked pre-draft. Corner, we need to fill that. O-line, we need help. Edge, we need help. The corner room is suddenly looking in much better shape. Humphrey, Stevens, Millett, Wiggins, Tampa. They're going to make the team just based on where they were, you know, who they are and where they were drafted. That's five guys. They're going to carry eight corners, maybe seven. So just pick a couple of names that you like from those remaining young players who have not kind of made, you know, kind of made their mark, but there are still four or five guys that I think they'll be competing for those last few spots at corner. O-line probably still needs a veteran addition. I would not be surprised if in August we see them sign somebody, but there's a ton of names for three spots that need taking. It's both guard spots and it's right tackle. You have Rosengarten, Nick, Sala, Falele, Voorhees, McCarry, Cleveland, and Jones. Look, none of these guys are Pro Bowlers. None of these guys are superstars. But we've watched a couple of these players play. There are a lot of, I would say, fairly talented names that have to fight each other for those three spots. And it's a good problem to have with a lot of these players. The cream has to rise to the top, basically, right? Like, what are the three best names from this group that end up getting these starting spots? And then one gets replaced by the starter that they get in August, who is actually a better offensive lineman. Some other holes. Edge, maybe still need another name there. At wide receiver, Rashad Bateman got an extension since the last time we spoke. I feel like Ravens Twitter loves Rashad Bateman. I am not a fan. And it really doesn't even have a ton to do with his... I don't think he's played badly. I don't like his effort. The injuries have been a problem. And I will never forget him dropping that pass off his chest in the Steelers game last season. The lob that Lamar threw him that literally hit him between the... I can't say between the numbers because he wears one... So it's one digit, so there's only one number there. Hit him right on the number. He's a frustrating player for me. He's extended for three seasons. I'm going to go ahead and assume that the money is good from a Ravens standpoint, so we have Rashad Bateman in our lives for at least a couple more years. But some other needs, maybe an inside linebacker is another spot where there's just no depth at the moment. So I want to get your guys' takes. You know, we're wrapping up here, but takes on remaining needs, glaring needs, where you think the Ravens will go over the summer to get somebody, or what positions you think you're feeling better about now.
First take. I'm super disappointed that you didn't go full Macho Man Randy Savage when you said cream rise to the top.
The cream.
The whole thing.
Rise to the top, brother.
I watch WrestleMania once a year and I find it fascinating. And then I stopped caring about wrestling for 364 days. It's interesting. I want to start with the offensive line because I include myself in this group. I think the Ravens are much higher on the group than the Ravens fan base is, because a lot of times we haven't seen them. I mean, remember Andrew Voorhees, 7th-round pick last year out of USC. And everybody, that when he got picked, everybody slobbed on the Ravens and went, this is a guy that would have been a round 2 pick if his leg wasn't broken. Like, okay, let's see it. He hasn't played football for a year. Let's see if he actually is like a plug-and-play starter that by the time we get through camp, or we're in camp, it's like, oh yeah, yeah, Voorhees is just the right guard for this team. Like, just that's who it is. That's the Kevin Zeitler replacement. You know, Saleh from Oregon was a guy competing with John Simpson, and at start of training camp last year was the favorite to win that job over John Simpson. Is he taking another step? Like, did the Ravens address a need a year ago that we think they have now? I think is going to be a very interesting question there. If not, I just looked it up thanks to Sharp Football Analytics. Tyree Phillips is still a free agent and one of the best remaining guard free agents on the market, so we could just sign Tyree Phillips again, because I'm sure that wasn't a disaster a couple of years ago. No, I jest. I think O-line still for me, even with that thinking, I know there's a lot of guys competing there. I don't see it as a need in terms of a place they need to upgrade if they truly believe in these guys, but I think they really need to be ready for a plan B. And I don't think it would be the worst thing to have a veteran, you know, presence in there with all these young guys competing for those guard spots. Because you don't want Mekari to play guard. You want him as your swing tackle for these guys. Excuse me. One of the ones that we've mentioned a little bit, you know, I think corners pretty much, you know, they always lose corners, so it's always something. But a third safety, I think, is massively important, and it was not addressed in this draft. I think Kyle Hamilton is such a chess piece that you want to keep a chess piece, that in order to move him around, you need to have a Geno Stone that can play on the back end with Marcus Williams, who, by the way, isn't the healthiest guy. Since he joined the Baltimore Ravens, which we've lamented about over and over again, too. So I think a third safety is crucially important. And then, you know, Jace, if you want to take inside linebacker, go ahead. I think Trenton Simpson played really well in that Steelers game, and they have high hopes for him. I mean, he was a third-round pick last year and basically was the queen successor. So more bodies for sure. Completely agree with that. But there's plenty to be done here, and this is where old EDC likes to cook the draft and then the post-draft free agents. But for me, just quickly on the Bateman thing, I'm with you. I don't love the effort either, and I don't love the diva to production scale for him. Like, that graph is all over the place for Bateman, it seems like, a little bit. But I like the deal for the Ravens, because I think ideally he can be very productive, like in a perfect world, and you avoid the fifth-year option nonsense, because there's no way they're picking up a fifth-year option for Rashad Bateman. They keep that number down. He clearly wants to be here, which I think is a positive sign too. And, you know, maybe he sees this opportunity with the likes of Odell Beckham Jr. gone to really step up and take that number two receiver role. So see if it happens.
So just a kind of interesting thing that came out today on the Bateman extension. And the number I'd seen on that is $15 million. So it's not a big extension. And I think that's commensurate with his production, which has been, frankly, not much. I'm not a huge Bateman guy, not a Bateman believer. Those first few weeks of the 2022 season were spectacular, and then just nothing he put on tape last year suggests that guy. He just didn't seem like the same player. But Jeff Zeribic reported this today. He said, a bit of context on the Bateman deal. He was not actually eligible for a fifth-year option on his rookie contract because he's only been credited with 2 accrued seasons, I guess, by the NFL. And that's a result of him starting last season's training camp on the, quote, did not report list. So I had forgotten about all that. But there's... this was, I guess, just a bit of housekeeping. I think they were never picking up his fifth-year option based on certainly the production. It seems like a bit of an agreement for both sides to just say, hey, let's run it back. And I guess I'm fine just in the sense they need bodies in the position. I'm not like a huge fan of Bateman's personally, but I guess that's how it played out, is that it was kind of just the solution that just made the most sense for all sides. That being said, while I still think we could add to wide receiver, I think I actually leave the draft with Edge still as my kind of biggest area of need, and where I think they need to...
Well, Jason, let me jump in here, because your son or nephew, I don't know, but the player's there. He's in the building, Jace, and it's none other than Joe Evans. undrafted free agent out of Iowa, not actually related to Jace in any way, but I'm too excited about this undrafted free agent that I'm sure is going to get swallowed up alive by NFL offensive linemen. 9.5 sacks last year out of Iowa. He had like 28 in his career as an Iowa player. I'm intrigued. He's a bit undersized, but he kind of uses the lack of height to kind of like dip under offensive tackles, and he had very exciting tape. So whoever this relative of yours is, Jace, I am into Joe Evans filling one of those spots, but obviously, yes, you never know with undrafted free agents. And we have needed edge help since 2012.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be cool a story if he makes it. I mean, he was, you know, obviously Iowa's most productive. The just absolutely fascinating Iowa offense has been one of the best Iowa defense has been one of the best in football the last few years, as their offense has been one of the worst, which in my mind has made the Iowa defense the best in all of college football, because they are working at the greatest disadvantage playing across from the worst offense in the sport. So it'd be intriguing if he makes it. I guess if we're just touching on other undrafted free agents, the other name that jumps out is Bo Braid, the Maryland safety, who I admit, I don't watch much Maryland football. Not something I choose to do on my Saturdays. But this line jumped out to me from Dane Brugler's Beast package here. And makes me think there's a very good chance Braid makes this team. But his wrap-up summary said, overall, Braid needs to be more consistent as a ball hawk and tackle finisher, but his confident cerebral trigger and athletic mentality are promising traits, and this is why he'll make the team. He has the tools for an interchangeable nickel safety role and will play on special teams from day one. So if I had to put money on one undrafted free agent making the Ravens, I think I would actually put it on Braid over top of... even Joe Evans, just because of, what we talked about, the need at safety, and also he plays special teams, apparently. So that just seems like a guy that John Harbaugh is going to have a hard time saying no to. So if I had to pick one guy, to undrafted free agent, to make it, I'll pick him. But yeah, maybe Evans is the guy, maybe they add. But I think I'm okay with where they are with corner, and I think they... You know, just with the O-line, they have so many bodies in there now, and it's like no one you're going to add between now and the start of the season is going to be a Pro Bowler, most likely. It just doesn't really happen. People don't let go of good linemen. So it's unlikely. Like, I think they will bring in pieces, but I'm pretty comfortable, at least, if the coaching staff is comfortable. They have so many pieces. It's like someone's gonna seize the role. And Zarebic, I kind of just mentioned in his piece, I think it was his winners and losers piece, but he didn't explicitly say this, but he kind of parsed it out that, like, his belief, I guess, is that Voorhees is competing for the left guard role. Ben Cleveland might be in line to at least be the front runner for the right guard role. And then Rosengarten at the right tackle role. So basically two rookies and then our much maligned friend Ben Cleveland seem to be the front runners for the position. But that can change, because I think we've talked about Ben Cleveland being the front runner for a guard position for several years now, and it just hasn't really happened. So maybe this is his last and final shot. Maybe it actually happens. But I think on the whole, edge is where I leave the draft, even though I could see that I could add a receiver too. But even inside linebacker, they're not deep, but they did bring back Malik Harrison still around. And I am excited to see Trenton Simpson. They're clearly confident in him. They didn't add at all to the linebacker room in the draft, which I'm mildly surprised about, at least inside linebacker. So I say I'd leave the draft with my concerns primarily being edge wide receiver. And I think I'm okay with where the corner and the O-line position stand.
All right, I think that's going to do it for us here. We're going to exhale, zoom out again, and just let these 9+ new Ravens just start developing. Just get in the building, start learning, start hopefully becoming John Harbaugh's friend as opposed to his foe, and hoping we get some good, talented players in the lineup, because there's not a ton of... there's not a ton of holes for this team to compete again in the AFC, and so you hope that they nailed the draft. We are going to come back in 2 weeks, I think. There's not a ton of stuff happening in the immediate days post-draft outside of all the players getting fun photos and touring the facilities and all that stuff. So we're going to take a few weeks breathe after doing all of our mock draft research and post-draft assessments and come back to you with whatever news there is. But thank you for listening to us. This was a fun few weeks that we always enjoy. And I think the three of us think the Ravens got better, but how much better, obviously, is years to be seen. For Tim Horsey and Jace Evans, I am Antonio Barbera. Thank you for listening to us on Pod Like a Raven. We will see you in 2 weeks.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.